listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, the best radio station you'll ever hear.
The hour of the wolf is the hour between night and dawn. It is the hour when most people die, when sleep is deepest, when nightmares are most real. It is the hour when the sleepless are haunted by their deepest fear, when ghosts and demons are most powerful. The hour of the wolf is also the hour when most children are born. Ingmar Bergman's Hour of the Wolf. The hour in which reality becomes a mockery of madness and masks hide behind faces. The hour of all final moments. Hour of the Wolf. Max von Sydow. Liv Ullmann. In Ingmar Bergman's Hour of the Wolf. A diary of truths and lies like truths.
This is Hour of the Wolf, special edition. My name is Jim Freund. Here we are once again, Saturday mornings, 5 a.m. A place that holds 19 years of history for Hour of the Wolf. I will be here alternating with Back of the Book featuring R. Paul Martin and Pickles of the North. For the near future, anyway, during this plague that we are all enduring. I am recording from home, as pre-production is necessary. So if you hear the occasional dog bark, plane go by, phone ring, whatever, just consider it ambient sound. So, a bit of history. We opened with the trailer to the movie Hour of the Wolf. Margot Adler created the program starting in 1971, and I was working with her right from the start. And she named the program after that Ingmar Bergman movie. It is a lesser Bergman film, which is to say, much better than many of the director's greatest films. But the concept, which was described in that piece, is Vargteam. That's Swedish for Hour of the Wolf. The claim being that there's an old Roman belief, and while you heard what the announcers said, that belief entailed. So, given that the Hour of the Wolf is the morning twilight, Margot thought it was the perfect title. The show was on 5 days a week, 5 to 7 a.m., and always began with the music that you just heard, The Space Fleet by Peter Schickele, from the soundtrack of the motion picture Silent Running. Not a great movie, but a wonderful soundtrack. So I thought I would give some of the history of the show. But before I begin, let me just say that in 2 weeks, on June 6th, we will have a recorded interview with writer Veronica Roth, who, aside from being author of the Divergent series and a slew of short stories and some other novels, recently came out with her first novel for adults called Chosen Ones. And you will hear that interview. But this morning is going to be retrofitted because program director Linda Perry Barr, well, gave me, in essence, less than 24 hours notice saying, we need this 1 hour show by tomorrow morning. Yes, it's 1 hour for now. For the first time, Hour of the Wolf is an hour. It's been 2 hours. It's been 3 hours. It's never been 5 hours, because when I had 5 hour programs, I called them something different. But Hour of the Wolf has, for me, become not just a time of day, but a branding. So I thought I would reintroduce the history of this show. Margot was working in the news department with Paul Fisher at that time, and Neil Conan and Mike Hodel. And the live radio, freeform live radio that was on WBAI in those days was pretty much a boys' club. Liza Cowan and Carol Ratner found their way on the air with some fine shows, but they weren't quite in the same kind of thing, and Margot wanted in. So she made a deal with the station manager that she would continue doing the weekend news, but allow herself to be fired so that she could get unemployment on the condition that she obtain a particular time slot. Now, in those days, and this is 1971, WBAI was not a 24-hour radio station. Bob Fass or Steve Post, who had the weeknights, would sign off, well, pretty much whenever, sometime after 3 a.m. So Margot came up with the idea of a 5 to 7 a.m. time slot. And that is how WBAI became a 24-hour-a-day radio station. And Margot did simply the most brilliant radio of all. You can find lots of notices about her on the web, possibly an air check or two. I don't have many of her, I'm very sorry to say. But her radio was brilliant. 5 days a week, she would extemporaneously discuss anything from a dream she had the night before to a fantasy about Tom Seaver, which I was sworn to secrecy about. She would tell me about it, say, "Freund, you can never tell anybody else." Then she'd go right on the air and blab the whole thing on the radio. So much for the secret that I had to hold, right? But she was a genius, and her attitude on the radio, this voice coming at you at 5 a.m., was magical. And magic is a very appropriate word, given that not too long into the show, Margot became involved with Wicca, and subsequently wrote the book Drawing Down the Moon, which has never been out of print. A great many neo-pagans, a great many people that call themselves Wiccans or witches probably owe their origins to Margot discussing it on the radio and writing about it. We're now into umpteen generations, and some of the people may have learned it from other wonderful people in the craft. But if you trace it back in the U.S., it was already pretty much a thing in England. Gardnerian witchcraft, or Wicca, pretty much came from her. So this is a person who was a journalist, a witch, a fan of science fiction. Well, that's where I came in. We were close friends. She was essentially, at 7 years my senior, the closest thing that I had to an older sister. I have an older brother, but my relationship with Adler at that time was this very close-knit older sister kind of thing. And given our mutual interest in science fiction and the fact that she had to fill 10 hours a week, 2 hours each weekday morning, she decided that Thursday and Friday mornings would become science fiction shows. Not an unusual thing at WBAI, or for that matter, at some of the other Pacifica stations in those days. When I began volunteering at WBAI, first person that I worked for was Baird Searles, whose stable of producers included Joanna Russ, Samuel R. Delaney, less a producer than a writer, Theodore Sturgeon, and Thomas M. Dish. It was quite amazing. If you're familiar with the worlds of fantasy, science fiction, speculative fiction, these are amazing names. And I was 13, 14 years old at that point. They say the golden age of science fiction is 13, and I like to add to that, well, that was me. So I began working with Margot. I was engineering her pretty much, oh, I'd say 4 out of the 5 days a week that she was on. But Thursday and Friday, I became her co-host. After a couple of years of this, in 1973, the summer of 1973, Margot and I had both submitted to and had been accepted to the Clarion Science Fiction Writers Workshop. This is an intensive 6-week workshop. This was the first time Clarion was being held in the West. It had expanded from being a small thing in Pennsylvania to becoming a part of a program at Michigan State University, and now Clarion West was born. And I simply could not afford to go. It's 6 weeks long. There's room and board, not to mention the tuition for attending Clarion itself. By the way, for those people interested nowadays, there are various ways to get scholarships, but that's another show. I had also the choice of I could go to Clarion, I could find a way to do it, or I could take over the show from her for those 6 weeks. Well, so I did. And when Adler came back, she continued doing the show for merely a couple of months and graduated to more primetime slots and doing more journalism and more intensive radio and scripted radio in many ways. She was producing some radio drama and branching out. And I took over Hour of the Wolf. Now, Adler was easy to find ways of speaking 10 hours a week. That wasn't me. That isn't me. And aren't you glad of that? But I began with that same slot over a period of time, got whittled down from 5 to 3 days a week, then 2 days a week, then Fridays, then Thursdays. And then in 1982, Steve Erickson, our program director, short-lived as a program director, but still doing all kinds of amazing stuff, although now in Europe, took Simon Lokely's brilliant program entitled Why the Revolution Hasn't Come, that ran from 5 to 8:30 a.m. And he inserted me on Saturdays, 5 to 7, and locally did 7 to 8:30. And he was doing brilliant radio. And I wasn't that terrible myself. And we were a great segue. Locally would be talking about James Joyce and stuff. And I, having only one morning a week at this point, since I only had the one, I wasn't just doing freeform radio. I was doing the science fiction program that Adler and I did together on the Thursdays and Fridays. And Hour of the Wolf became just that, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, and related fields of endeavor. And I was in that slot for 19 years. And then about 10 years ago, when a particular program director came into WBAI, he was very, shall we say, disruptive. Some people would say in a good way. Sometimes disruption is good when things get too static. Some people were not happy. But among other things, he got rid of Hour of the Wolf in that time slot. Sometime later, 3-4 weeks later, wasn't that long, he found me a slot Wednesdays following Robert Knight, and going from Robert Knight with his Earthwatch program to me was actually not the worst thing in the world, but now I was on 1:30 a.m. to 3 a.m. Now, 5 to 7 a.m., 6 to 7 a.m. is primetime radio, and 5 to 6 is a very interesting time of night. I really enjoy it, and it truly is the Hour of the Wolf at that time, Vargtimen. So, the show became a little bit more formal in some ways, a little less formal, a little less formal in other ways. And then Robert sadly passed away. And I gained a half hour and was then on from 1 to 3 a.m. Oh, I should mention that that program director had made a promise that Robert was going to be moving to a 5 to 6 p.m. daily time slot and that I would inherit Earthwatch. So I would be on midnight to 3. That did not happen. On weekday afternoons fell through. And so Robert, of course, held on to Earthwatch, and I remained 1:30 to 3 until Robert's death, and then I was on from 1 to 3 a.m. And I guess I had been in that slot for a little under 10 years. Then came this plague, and program director Linda Perry Barr, who I had known for years earlier as Linda Perry before she married the wonderful producer Richard Barr. He was the head of our music department for some time. Yes, we had a music department. She had left the station for a while to work for the CBC, came back, blah, blah, blah. And at the beginning of this lockdown, and an email told me that Hour of the Wolf was, quote, on hiatus. Well, about 48 hours ago, she and I were on the phone, and she asked if I was willing to do, for the duration of this crisis, this lockdown, a one-hour show alternating with R. Paul Martin and Pickles of the North, as she is known on the air. So, I'm not a fan of alternating at all. Neither is Linda Perry a fan of shows that alternate. But right now, for overnight radio, everything needs to be pre-produced. And for whatever reason, after about 10 weeks of exile, I got a surprise phone call saying, do this show once every 2 weeks. And that is what you are listening to now. I would like to tip my hat, by the way, to the wonderful Earth Mum, who was doing a lovely morning show in this time slot, and she passed a few months ago. Other people seem to know something about that, but it was a surprise and shock to me. She was a lovely, wonderful, warm person. I was her first guest because she knew my history with the time slot. And she will be missed. It's sad how many people I've discussed in here. Robert Knight, Simon Locally, Earth Mum, that need to have eulogies done for them. And of course, Margot Adler, who passed about 7 years ago at this point. So, I can tell you now that this morning, we're not going to do so much of a science fiction show. It was, after all, once upon a time, simply freeform radio. And we're going to do a little bit of that. But first, I'm going to play one of the stalwart songs that Margot and then I would play by Tom Rapp of Pearls Before Swine. Somewhat loosely based on Kaleidoscope by Ray Bradbury. This is Star Dancer.
place where he can see a star. The open land above the air is where the answers are. When stars go burning through the night, you can never touch them all.
I'm Dan Persons, and this is my Hour of the Wolf review. Do not go to Panama. Granted, few of us are traveling anywhere these days, and even if we weren't restricting our movements, I doubt that many of us were planning on a trip to Panama. But if you were, don't. The place is just a hotbed of madness with witch covens, cannibals, infant sacrifice, exploding churches, and most terrifying of all, independent bus services, the Diablo Rojos, Red Devils of the title, given that moniker for their strict observance of traffic laws and obsessive concern for passenger safety. Can you tell I'm being sarcastic? In this case, the Diablo Rojo we're talking about is Miguel, played by Carlos Carrasco, who one night after being possessed by a bruja, pilots his LED-bedecked, garishly decorated bus, along with his apprentice Junito, played by Julian Uriola, into a timeless void that transports them back to Miguel's hometown. They pick up a couple of cops along the way, and I'm sorry, IMDb isn't helping me with the actor's credits here, and a priest, played by Simon Tejera. There, got that. And they're going to need them, since, as noted previously, it's going to be an endless evening of witches, cannibals, sacrifices, giant hell beasts, and the traditional finale of melting Satan worshippers. You know, the typical bus route. There's a lot of Evil Dead energy to Diablo Rojo, open parens, PTY, close parens. There's a distinct 70s vibe to the production, and it's just an onslaught of testicles-out supernaturalness. What it lacks in polish, it makes up for in energy. I would mark that up as coincidence, but the ending of the film unabashedly steals the endings from no less than two other legendary horror films. I'm not saying which, you'll know them when you see them. So I'm thinking director Sol Moreno knew what she was doing. And yes, that's Sol, not Saul. She is a woman, and welcome to the club. We need a lot more like you. IMDb also notes her co-writer, Jota Najera, as co-director, but he's listed in the film's credits as producer and sole writer, so I'm not sure what's happening there. What gives the film an added kick is the not surprising Latin outlook toward the supernatural, and also, maybe because of that, an emotional undertone to the story, tying the madness to an event in Miguel's past. It makes the film more than just a whole bunch of wild stuff going on. I was already immensely enjoying Diablo Rojo Pty's onward rush into supernatural wackiness, that Moreno and Najera managed to give it at least a little more depth, makes it a wild bus ride with a solid destination. The 2011 National Theater presentation of Frankenstein, newly adapted for the company by Nick Deer, directed by Danny Boyle, and that was available on YouTube, not anymore, maybe your friend has a copy, presents some interesting paradoxes, at least for me. There are two versions, one with Benedict Cumberbatch as the creature and Johnny Lee Miller as Dr. Frankenstein, the other in which they switch roles. I watched the one with Cumberbatch as the creature, and the first 10 minutes is spent completely dialogue-free, as the creature emerges from a womb-like containment, struggles to gain control of his body, struggles to understand what has happened to him. Cumberbatch's interpretation is agonizing and terrifyingly physical. He throws himself at the nearly bare stage, contorts into unimaginable and inhuman forms, grimaces and screams. It's as much a dance as acting, beautiful in its way, and sets the tone for the presentation that follows. What strikes me about it is the bigness of the performance. That's to be expected from a stage presentation where the audience is set at a remove, and even the cameras, also at a remove, cannot zoom in too close or risk shaking so much that it makes the production look like it was filmed during an earthquake. By the way, Danny Boyle directed the stage production, but the television version was directed by Tim Van Someren, who manages to capture the immediacy of live theater while also allowing the video medium to add to the experience. For instance, replicating the creature's pain at birth by washing the screen out with a burst of light. But while I was thinking, yeah, you're playing it pretty big there, Benny, it turns out having the cameras forced to take in most of the production at closest, middle distance works for the performances. And don't think that by calling Cumberbatch's performance big, I'm criticizing it. It's great work. Downright terrifying in its passion. And the distance works for the play as a whole. Isolating the creature on a naked stage, or trapping him with Johnny Lee Miller's Frankenstein in Two Shot, where the intensity of their interactions is palpable. And by the way, Miller is great in the play as well, as is the rest of the cast. This is the National Theater. What was I expecting? But I've got to give credit to Naomi Harris in particular, who makes Elizabeth, Frankenstein's doomed fiancée, much more than just another casualty along the way. Nick Deer takes profound liberties with the original text, which is pretty much necessary, yet in many ways gets as close to Mary Shelley's original intent, a nightmare made all the more indelible by its beauty and humanity. Danny Boyle translates that text into an epic and complex stage presentation, establishing a world on the cusp of industrialization and using a canopy of hundreds of incandescent lights to portray both the terrors and beauty of the natural world, as well as the emotions expressed in beholding it. Let me say my experience with the adaptations of Frankenstein is not encyclopedic, but I've seen a goodly amount from the ridiculous to the sublime. For managing to capture not just the terror of the tale, but also its soul, the National Theater's Frankenstein is at the very least a match for James Whale's legendary version. It's a singular and magnificent experience. And remember to check out my YouTube series, Historama 3D, on your VR headset through the YouTube VR app, or on computer or portable device using red cyan anaglyph glasses through regular old YouTube. The feature films Gamera and Lady Frankenstein are there for you to enjoy, and coming soon will be the animated, patriotic, and capitalistic short, Make Mine Freedom. And we're working on another feature. Stay tuned for that. Just search Historama 3D. And again, remember, if you have a few bucks to spare, think of those who don't, and give to your local food bank or partnersinhealth@pih.org or savethechildren.org or any charity doing good work at these times. People need help, and if you can, please show some support. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
Thank you, Dan. Dan Persons has been recording reviews for Hour of the Wolf for some 10 or 11 years at this point. And that was a very appropriate segue because he was talking about the National Theater's brilliant, ever so brilliant production of Frankenstein. And it fits in to what I am doing perfectly, because when talking with Linda Perry about returning to our air, she offered me a finger and I took a hand. I basically pitched her another show and she accepted it. But it's all of 3.5 minutes. The idea of the show is to let you know what's streaming. Now, I know Mike Sargent does this kind of thing on his program, but he's mostly doing movies and things like that. And right now, with movie theaters closed, he's covering streaming. But we're not going to have too much crossover, because the kinds of things I'm talking about, I promise you, many of them are very different from what he is doing. Thank you. So, let's get into it. This ain't going to be the 3.5 minute version. This is going to be the 9 minute version. So, we're going to cover theater, interviews, webcams, readings, performing arts, all kinds of curious, interesting things that are, well, sort of one of the few positive fallouts that we have as a result of this year of the plague. And for right now, I'm staying away from streaming services like Netflix, Prime, the forthcoming HBO Max. By the time my next show is on June 6th, HBO Max will have launched. So my version of this guide is to help you find your way to the world of theater, dance, and other performances and certain eclectic kinds of things. And everything that I am going to mention on this particular program, with the exception of one item, is on YouTube. That means that it's, number one, free. Number two, totally accessible to anybody who has any kind of internet access. It can be a tablet, a smartphone, a Roku box, a Chromecast on your TV. Perhaps you have a TV that uses either Roku or Android as its operating system. Everything there is free. Some of the things will ask for donations for various charities, but that's up to you. There are no strings attached in any of this. Now, about an hour before I began recording this show, I discovered a wonderful show. The British Museum has just put up a 90-minute tour of their scheduled summer exhibit all about Pompeii and the other city that was next to Pompeii. I always forget the name of, everybody does, and that's the problem. But watch this show and you'll learn more. It began on May 20th, and as of 2 days later, today, it's got about 57,000 views. Do not worry when you see Boris Johnson near the beginning. He's only there for a few seconds, thank God. It's a few seconds too much. But then you will spend time with two of my favorite historians, Bettany Hughes and Mary Beard. And they talk about the art and history of Pompeii and what life would have been like, you know, not just for the senators, for the slaves, it's really worthwhile. There's a YouTube channel called Visit Flanders, and they have about 5 walkthroughs, each one with a different docent, a different art historian who will examine one of the Dutch masters. So one of them is Peter Bruegel, both the elder and the younger, but mostly the younger. And then there's the Louvre, and the Metropolitan Museum of Art have walkthroughs of major exhibits. The Lincoln Center Library has a walkthrough of their temporary exhibit dedicated to Hal Prince. And by the time this mess is over, that will be gone. So this is a great way to see it. Now, here's the one thing, get a pencil ready. Here's the one thing that you're going to need to go to a website for that's not just YouTube. And that is that this coming Friday, May 27th, will be the first manned U.S. launch to the International Space Station in almost 10 years. So Neil deGrasse Tyson has started a series called Space Fest at Home. There'll be about four shows on that day alone. And the press release I got intimates that this is going to be an ongoing series. So for that, you need to go to Museum of Natural History's website. That is AMNH, American Museum of Natural History, .org/calendar/SpaceFest. My guess is if you just go to AMNH.org, you can probably find your way to the rest of it. But that's this coming Friday, the 27th, and sounds like it's going to be fun. Theater. You want theater, you get theater. The National Theater, the NT, as it is called in England, has had some of the most wonderful things. They put up a new show every Thursday. Unfortunately, they only last a week, so stay on top of that. Right now, they have A Streetcar Named Desire starring Gillian Anderson. It was on the NT that they had that Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller Frankenstein. By the way, isn't it wonderful that the two actors playing Victor and the creature are both Sherlocks, modern Sherlocks? Trivia question. Did Dr. Victor Frankenstein create a creature? If you know the answer, email me, jim@ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF.com. And as I used to say on Techie Time, in case of prize, duplicate ties will be awarded. So the NT is great. Stratford on Avon has had a variety of Shakespeare in different guises, as has the Globe. Now, the Globe has been also fooling around with times and genders, doing gender fluid and I guess time fluid, you should call it, adaptations of Shakespeare. And some of them are very good and some not as good as others. Actually, the same thing is true of Stratford. Their production, the NT. The production of Jane Eyre is so far the best thing I have seen. But their Treasure Island had the best stagecraft, but the script, meh. Then Andrew Lloyd Webber has a weekly event called The Shows Must Go On. You need to leap on those because sometimes they last only 2 days. He has run out of his own shows. So if you had to see Cats, well, don't wait for the movie. Find another way to see it. I really didn't hate Phantom of the Opera, which I thought I would. But I certainly did hate By Jeeves. And apparently, so did Lloyd Webber. So, there you go. Now, if you Google for theater, you may find certain things like Into the Woods. Be very, very careful. Because what you might end up seeing is, well, not even seeing. Somebody just puts up an album and that's all you get is the music. That's not the best way to do it. Also, you might see the shaky cam version of the fine Central Park production with Donna Murphy. And I'd love to see that, but the recording is so bad. Heads getting in the way, crappy sound, blah, blah, blah. you're better off not. Okay. Seth Rudetsky is doing shows twice a day called Stars in the House. He's had Patti LuPone. He's had Melissa Manchester. He knows everything and anything there is to know about musical theater. He can correct and has corrected Stephen Sondheim on Sondheim songs. So that's Seth Rudetsky. In the future, I hope to cover webcams and readings, at least two New York reading series that are currently available online. Full disclosure, I produce one of them. No, they do not come in by jet. That sounds like a military aircraft. Ooh. There's a lot of ballet, a great deal of ballet. The Mariinsky Theater has Sleeping Beauty one day and La Traviata the next. These stay online. You don't have to worry about the speed on that. And Lincoln Center has had all kinds of programs on YouTube, ranging from Winston Marsalis's tribute to Miles Davis to the San Francisco Ballet. But if it's the arts you crave, don't touch that dial. We have cabaret music presented by Dave Kenny. Theater music and discussion with the legendary David Rothenberg. Radio drama on the golden age of radio with Max Schmid. And new to our airwaves, I beg your pardon. And new to our airwaves on Saturday night, the Metropolitan Virtual Playhouse, which Max calls Zoom Theater. So we've got you covered as well, and that makes us a great time to become a BAI buddy to help us through these times. So you knew it had to happen. I had to pitch, right? Please call 516-620-3602 and, you know, pledge like $10 a month. That's what a BAI buddy is. It's sort of like Patreon for listener-sponsored radio. And you can tell them what your favorite show is. Mine? Well, it's Hour of the Wolf. Isn't that yours? You can also go online to give to WBAI.org, and then you select favorite show e-donation, and, well, you know what show is your favorite, don't you? So, speaking of people posting material on YouTube, Christine Lavin, one of my favorite singer-songwriters, has been posting laptop concerts of her songs, many of them new, most pretty much every week, and sometimes even more. Here's a song that she wrote a few years ago, which has become more timely than ever.
Next person who hugs and kisses me and then says, I'm sick. Please see why I feel justified giving you one swift kick. If you're sick, you must not touch. I can't stress this point too much. I know you love everybody and everybody loves you. Doesn't mean we love your germs and your microbes too. What to do, what to do, what to do. Bring back the bow. Starting right now. If you're sick and you touch me, kapow! Come on, sick people, bow. Bring back the bow. I'll show you how. You're thinking that looks easy. Wow. Let's bring back the... But maybe bowing is not your style. There's other moves I behoove you to use. If you're sick, that won't get me riled. For instance, just adapt a serious look. Think Nixon when he said, I am not a crook. Then place your two palms together. Greet people like this next time you're under the weather. Namaste. That's all you say. And it's good if you can pretend to pray when you say namaste. Namaste. We'll keep the sick at bay. Chase colds away with a bold namaste. Something else you can try, just a bit more normal. If a sneezy person comes toward you with their lips lips all in a pucker. Scream, get away from me, you sick lozenge sucker. Or say namaste and bow. But now you know how. If you're sick and you touch me, kapow. Come on, sick people, bow. Bring back the bow. How now, brown cow? Let's all kowtow. Let's bring back if your head hurts, your belly aches. No hugs, no kisses, no handshakes. Starting here and now. Let's bring back. Don't make me want to smack you. Let's bring back the bow. The knuckle tap is okay too.
This has been a special edition of Hour of the Wolf. I will be back in 2 weeks on June 6th with an interview and reading from Veronica Roth. Tune in this time next week for the end of Back of the Book with R. Paul Martin and Pickles of the North. Better yet, tune in at 5 a.m. to hear them. And I'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a good week. Stay well.
Sometimes we're not prepared for adversity.
Cannonball Adderley.
When it happens, sometimes we're caught short. We don't know exactly how to handle it when it comes up. Sometimes we don't know just what to do when adversity takes over. And I have advice for all of us. I got it from our pianist, Joe Zawinul, who wrote this tune. And it sounds like what you're supposed to say when you have that kind of problem. It's called mercy. Mercy. Mercy.
For WBAI in New York. I'm Linda Perry, program director of this wonderful radio station, and here's my report to the listener for May 2020. As you know, part of WBAI's mission is to serve economically disadvantaged, low-income and poor people, immigrants, newcomers, refugees. We're doing this through many of our legacy and new programs, like Working Class Heroes with a Young Latinx Collective. They joined us Thursday evenings at 7:30, right after Indivisible 101. Caribbean Voices and Beyond with Isaac Ferguson is on Saturday afternoons from 4 to 6 p.m., and a second edition of On the Count for those behind bars, as well as support for reentry and loved ones, is now on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. as well as Saturday morning at 10. We have a new climate action program, Think 100%, with the Hip Hop Caucus and Reverend Yearwood Friday mornings. Green Street is now on weekly at 10 a.m. on Tuesdays. Staying Home with Josh Fox, your revolutionary guide to the Green New Deal, is now on weekdays, Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. And we're broadcasting the Metropolitan Virtual Playhouse. These are live Victorian age plays broadcast on WBAI Saturday evening. Other changes include an additional program for one of the favorites here at WBAI, David Rothenberg, and he's also one of our most successful on-air fundraisers. Besides Saturday morning, he's now also on Monday mornings at 10 a.m. Glenn Ford and Margaret Kimberly with Black Agenda Report join us Wednesdays at 3 p.m. And Sri Srinivasan hosts Coping with COVID, a helpful, hopeful call-in show on Saturdays at noon. We are sharing our programs with WPFW, our sister station, and they are sharing theirs with WBAI. This as we move towards a more collaborative relationship with the Pacifica Network after the coup. We now have regular hourly newscasts during the week, and at 6 p.m. weekdays, we've got Indy's John Tarleton delivering the WBAI evening news on Mondays, and Paul DiRienzo has been giving us steady newscasts Tuesday through Fridays. We have more in the works, and we'll share more in good time. As you're well aware, if you listen to the station, almost all of our programs are addressing the COVID pandemic in one way or another. Struggles of our first responders and essential workers, and how the virus and restrictions disproportionately affect people of color. We're carefully watching and reporting on the reopening, as well as mixed signals from this White House. All that being said, we are also, of course, operating remotely. Our staff is doing a wonderful job. For example, Felipe Luciano is broadcasting from Puerto Rico on Saturdays, but you'd almost think he was in our studio thanks to his commitment and our excellent ops staff, operations staff, most notably Reggie, Max, Michael, Sean, Giovanni, and Catherine. Regarding our listenership, we know pre-COVID that we have a large listenership that drives in the morning and afternoon in New Jersey and to and from Long Island and Westchester. We are collecting and evaluating data to understand what effect, if any, COVID has on radio, and specifically on WBAI and Pacifica. I just want to take a moment to thank those of you who have become supporters of WBAI, who are reaching out to help this radio station, this listener-sponsored non-commercial radio station during this crisis, to keep it floating, to keep it broadcasting. And of course, you can always still support WBAI. Call 516-620-3602 and become a WBAI member or a buddy to one of your favorite shows or all WBAI shows. Stay safe, and thanks once again.
Thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Hi, this is Iggy Pop, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth.
I took a pounding from the radio today. I heard the radio say that